Hello, and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. I am your host today, and my name is Phil.
I'm Logan.
In today's episode, we are going to be revisiting one of my favorite terms that we had in one of our past episodes. This is the sequel to corpo lore.
Okay.
That one was previously about Fallout's vault tech. And I'm, you know, it's a sequel, so it's a less good version and a little bit loosey-goosey on the themes. So this one's technically about Outer Worlds in general. I think it's 2019 RPG by Obsidian that came out the same year as Outer Wilds,
which is about to say which one's which, because there's no way to know.
Yep. Outer Wilds, which is the game we are not talking about today, is the incredible time loop puzzle game that makes most people motion sick and also is a religious experience for the people who finish it. That's not this game. This one is Obsidian's Outer Worlds, which is from the people who brought you Fallout New Vegas. And it is a future-y space exploration, I guess, game of that variety. So it's very, you know, you talk to people straight on, and when you press interact on them, sometimes they will turn to face you, pause for a second, and then they will say their lines. It's one of those. It's in the same Fallout Elder Scrolls style.
Is this like a weirdly a Starfield prequel?
A kind of. it's very weird. So initially my roundabout path of getting here is that I really wanted to do corpo lore because this game is a cyberpunk game by way of like turn of the century robber baron retrofuturism, which is just fun. I recently just replayed this game because I wanted to play the new Star Wars game and I wanted to play the new Space Marine game, but I didn't want to pay Ubisoft money for Star Wars, and Space Marine wasn't out yet, so I picked one that had space in it, I guess.
Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, so I did that, and I was like, oh, there's some interesting stuff in here I remember, and then I remember the conceit of the game, which we will talk about in greater detail later. I was like, oh, I could do a corpo lore on this, and then after probably a couple hours, I was like, I could not do just a corpo lore on the companies going on here, but I can do a general episode about like how this world is built and kind of the fun things that the corporations do in this, which it's weird because the game takes like a satirical but also not so satirical lens on corporations and how people interact with them, which I think will be interesting to chat about. But before we get too far into this, I do want to jump scare you. What's your bright spot?
Oh, have you caught any of the celebrity number six weirdness on Reddit? Does that mean anything to you?
Celebrity number six. I know nothing about this.
Okay. This is just like, I don't know, one of the last few neat Reddit things I've seen in a long time. So I'm going to butcher this, but you can find news stories everywhere if you want accurate information. Don't come to me for truly accurate things ever.
Never do.
Good. There was some fabric that existed. It had like flattened and stylized portraits of celebrities kind of like tessellated together. And it's got like curtains or like maybe a shower curtain kind of vibe to the fabric. And someone posted a picture of it. I think it was like 4 years ago, maybe. Number of years ago now. And people thought it was kind of neat. And then there was let's figure out who all of these humans on this piece of fabric are. And over the course of time, people were able to find either the exact photo that the portrait came from or very similar ones for all but one of these individuals. And for multiple years, no one knew who celebrity number six was because they numbered each of them on the fabric to make discussion possible.
That's fantastic. Okay.
And it has so there's recently an identity? Been solved. There is an identity. Yeah, I believe she is an Italian model, I think.
Okay.
I read this yesterday. So I'm a little fuzzy. Yeah, I don't know. It was a rabbit hole that a lot of people fell down. Not a lot. A few people fell down very deeply over what is essentially a very meaningless thing. And it's neat that that has come full circle.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love when those things end up happening and there's a good, interesting resolution. I feel like too often it's someone found a safe in their house and then you either never hear from them again or there's nothing in there because, of course, there's nothing in there.
Yep.
But sometimes it's doubloons, and I always love it when it's doubloons.
Or, like, an unexploded landmine. That's the other thing that shows up sometimes.
Yes. Yeah.
People are like, what's this? And everyone's like, that's ordnance. A mortar.
Don't touch
and
that.
And you need to call a person.
Jesus, don't touch that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be my bright spot for this week, because it is the right kind of meaningless, delightful nonsense story.
Yeah, that's good stuff. My bright spot for today is, we went to the zoo today. I took the boy to the zoo because we needed to have a fun activity to do in the morning, and it was finally nice, beautiful weather out, so we were able to go there and have a good time. But the zoo here, they do zoo lights. Are you aware of what this is?
No. No, I have no idea.
So it's, I don't know what the origins of it are, but basically the zoo by us is, it's in like a very old park, so it's kind of like a very sprawling zoo instead of something that's like really tight and confined. And so every spring and every fall, I think there's some organization, I'm assuming that it's a like Chinese heritage organization or something, just based on it, almost every single time I've gone it has depicted like Chinese myth or things about Chinese culture, which is always just really fun to walk around. But they're giant like wire and like fabric sculptures that have they have lighting in them, so you'll walk down a like 12 foot tall archway of just orchids growing and, you know, massive bumblebees that are over there and like pollinating them, or you'll walk past, you know, one of the ones we saw was they must have been like 20 foot tall and 50 feet long Chinese dragons flanking the pathway to the birdhouse. And then it's just like massive sculptures and they're beautiful every time. So we went through there, and at night they end up lighting them up, and it's just like a really cool walk through the zoo at nighttime so they can get ticket sales and see this really cool stuff. But they just started loading it in, and I think they're getting pretty close to being done with it. So we went to the zoo, and maybe unfortunately for the zoo's sake, the animals were not the main attraction for us when we went there today. And instead we walked around and hugged all of the pandas and all of the fun little animals that you get to see around there that will be lit up at night. But during the day, it was just a fun little touch and go nature museum.
All of that checks out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Yeah.
Does it make you want to like design sets and lights again?
Oh, kind of. Some of them are like very rudimentary animatronics, you know, like you'll have like a panda that has a fruit in its hand or a bamboo stalk, and it'll like raise it to its mouth and then lower it down again. So it's like nothing complex, but it is really fun just to like walk through there and see like, ah, yes, I see how you've built this scene and then how you will use the lighting around it to make something cool out of it. It's neat. I have enjoyed it. And they've been different every time I've gone, which is kind of the cool thing.
Okay.
Like they change
them. So
they're
not just recycling?
No. They'll like put them in different places and like block off different parts of the zoo. And then they end up just using fully different like setups and everything. It's really neat.
Well, that's slick.
I like it a lot. But today we're not going to talk about something that's slick. We're going to talk about something that sucks.
This isn't going to be fun, is it?
Well, it'll be kind of, it's kind of fun in like a tongue in cheek kind of way.
Okay.
So we will start with something that I don't think we've talked about at all on the show proper. We haven't done an alternate history yet, have we?
Ooh. No, I don't think so.
Okay, the only one I could think of is we did a video on Prey, and that is an alternate history. But I don't think we've done one for the show yet.
Does Fallout count?
I guess. Yeah, technically maybe. I don't...
Does Pugmire count?
Well, I mean, that it's an remains alternate to be future. Seen if that's alternate.
Yeah.
Ooh. So, we don't know yet.
That's true. There could be some clairvoyance at work there.
Yeah. The reason I waffle on Fallout is just because the way that these alternate histories end up working is usually for a very tropey alternate history to work in my mind. It's like it's like what it is in Outer Worlds, where one fateful event in one country's history went one way, but what if it went the other way? And I don't necessarily know if Fallout has that kind of origin to it.
Like an inciting incident
of
sorts, or kind of like leaning into the great man theory of history sort of format.
Oh, wow. You have hit my second bullet point. Yes. The great man theory. So Prey in that video, we kind of revealed towards the end there that the alternate history in Arcane's Prey in 2017 is that JFK didn't die. Similarly, we come back to the great man theory, and maybe less of a great man. I don't really know much about the guy. He's one of the, well,
great magnitude is my understanding of the term.
Yeah.
Not necessarily great in quality.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what do you know about William McKinley?
Assassinated by an anarchist, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That is all I knew about William McKinley. Yep. So the alternate history of Outer Worlds begins with the not assassination of William McKinley. So I guess the more contextual thing here is he was assassinated in 1901 during the Pan American Exposition of Buffalo, New York. And 1901 is kind of in this political era at the turn of the century in America, which is not affectionately referred to as the Gilded Age. It's where, you know, this is where your Robert Barons, where your Vanderbilts, your Rockefellers, your Stanley Oil, all of those people are just absolutely raking in the money, doing very, very bad things.
Yeah.
Not like, similar to our like current murdering times workers at all.
Calling in the police to, and or army to break up strikes.
Yes.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think it is generally seen that McKinley is not really against those things. So when he is assassinated in 1901, Theodore Roosevelt becomes the president, and then he has a much larger legacy of antitrust legislation that kind of broke up that hyper-capitalist robber baron stuff in some ways. So the world...
That was his jam.
Yeah.
That dude loved busting a trust.
He sure did. And the Outer Worlds imagines a world where, what if that didn't happen? What if instead McKinley and his bros just continued to rake in all the money, and, you know, we never broke up antitrust, everything started to turn into this much more hyper-capitalist and just exceedingly corporate kind of world. And I think there's a lot of maybe questionable things about the notion that all it takes is Theodore Roosevelt to change the course of the world. I think the great man theory is generally seen as not super great.
Yeah, it feels like some real propaganda when you kind of break it down.
Yeah.
Like, well, we live in this individualistic society that needs to glorify that possibility. So
right.
Here's how we're gonna teach history. People mean nothing, right?
Like the notion of history is from the top, not from the bottom, is generally considered to be bunk. Like that's not how the world works.
No.
We will touch more on how the world works in a little bit, but just like a brief setup to how we get to Outer Worlds, and I'll kind of reveal a little bit about what Outer Worlds is. So McKinley doesn't die. Somehow there is still a giant war in the 21st century, referred to as the Great War. After that, the Earth Directorate is created. That is a planet-wide government and kind of a regulatory body, because again, corporations continue to thrive and become much more people than they are these days. And you know, yada yada, hundreds of years pass, and now the Earth Directorate is the group of people who are in charge of cataloging and then giving away off-world colonies and systems to the highest bidders for settling, or you know, just robbing for their resources, most likely. Around that time, as the war has somewhat dissipated the strength of the Earth Directorate, the skip drive is developed, and that's your warp drive, right? Like that's your thing that allows you to go past the speed of light, which now allows humanity to leave the traditional kind of nation state kind of way that it had been. And then now these the like outer colonies that are sold off to the higher bidders can now be accessed by these corporations, and then now we have like off-world colonies. And kind of the big difference here from something that I think is becoming more prominent in our current discussion of future colonization is that it's not related for science or religious or even political reasons. It's simply for profit. Like that is why we are going to the stars, and we are going there not for profit of all, but just profit for specific shareholders.
The children yearn for the space mines.
Yes. So we kind of jump forward a little bit so that the game takes place in the 23rd century, which is funny because when you look at it, it's still very much like Tin Man outfits, and it has a very good retro future vibe with a funny cyberpunk bend to it. I guess it's kind of an odd thing to place just because of the strength of corporations. But the stars have been sold to corporations, and with the skip drive, people are able to send their large ships off to these different stars and begin setting up their locations to either have local colonies or to make things and then send them back to Earth. And at some point during all of that, the Earth Directorate sold the Halcyon Cluster to the Halcyon Holdings Corporation. And that is the Halcyon Cluster is where the game takes place. So you are someone who awakens in the Halcyon Cluster, and then you run into all these different corporations and have to solve a problem. The Halcyon, this is going to be a little org charty for a minute, so you just got to sit with me.
That's fine. I can work with that.
So the Halcyon Holdings Corporation is a holding corporation of 10 different corporations, and they all come together and have pooled all their money together to buy the Halcyon Cluster, which is one of the furthest away from Earth. So it is the true far frontier of our ability to expand out into the stars. So these 10 companies, which in and of themselves have sub-companies as well, they pooled all of their resources together, and now they own the Halcyon Cluster. So they are fronting all of the money to move all of the people there, set up the worlds as they see it, and profit from that. So the 10 corporations we will briefly touch on because there's not as much to them as you would probably think. So the main ones, there is Universal Defense Logistics, and they primarily make guns and ships.
That makes sense. That's a good evil corp name.
Yeah. There's some good old timey like 1910s snake oil salesman names in here, and then there's just some good like bad company names. So UDL, Universal Defense Logistics, they made the two colony ships that came over from Earth. They also make the orbital ships that tend to blockade a planet if they need to, for reasons we might get into later, or the specific spaceships that fly from one place to another. So something to maybe not be super surprising to you, but just to put this out there, we're talking about, you know, the corporate politics of the early 1900s. So there is not another ship manufacturer. You know, we're working in a world where all of these companies that are here are specific monopolies into themselves, with maybe some differences, but primarily they are all monopolies. There is no competition between them. And that kind of plays out in the game where you have to go to specific vending machines to get specific things. There's no universal sale that you can get.
Can I ask a somewhat unrelated question?
Sure.
Can I murder a Pinkerton in this game?
Can you murder a Pinkerton? No. I don't think the Pinkertons exist in this game.
That kind of surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think so. There's mercenary companies, but there's not a Pinkerton.
Pinkertons still exist in our game. They're out there shaking people down for magic cards and stuff.
Oh, I forgot about the magic cards. That's really funny. Yeah, maybe I don't think there's Pinkertons in there. Listen, Worlds 2 is coming out soon-ish sometime. Okay. So there's still room for there to be Pinkertons.
Okay. If I have to put up with these nightmare corporations, I at least should be able to murder a Pinkerton.
Yeah. I think that's only fair.
Anyway, UDL, full-on monopoly.
Yep.
So in the worst ways.
There's UDL, and then each one of these companies gets one vote. And they are in the Halcyon Holding Corporation's board. And they're the main antagonists of the game. They're referred to as the board. So each one of these companies gets one vote because they chipped in. So underneath Universal Defense Logistics, there are three additional companies that are owned by UDL. So the first is Spacer's Choice, which is the whole reason I wanted to do this episode, because it's just a really corny, dumb company. And I felt like there was something there to do. There really isn't, but their whole thing is that they are the Walmart of space. They make the cheapest, junkiest things in a whole load of categories, and the expectation is that, I mean, their slogan is, it's not the best choice, it's Spacer's Choice.
That's good.
It's real good.
I'm here for that.
So Spacer's Choice, that's where you start out. You start in one of the settlements run by Spacer's Choice, and they are making a shittier version of Saltuna, which is a canned sardine-like thing that you can... It is like the main sustenance of the planets, or at least the main sustenance of the working class.
It's your victory gin in fish form.
Yep, in fish form. And all of the terrible things that come with that. The next one under UDL is Hunters and Trackers Limited, which is just a, you know, guess what? Trophy hunting among the stars. It's a real thing, folks. And that's literally all the details. It's just, I guess this is just where the hunters go and they want to go on expeditions. So they got you covered. You sell the guns and then you sell the experiences to use the guns, I guess.
Vertical integration.
Yes. And then the last one under UDL is Terra One Publications. So Terra One is the name of the planet that they originally settled. When things went sideways there, they moved to another planet, lovingly referred to as Terra Two. So Terra One Publications is basically a printing facility for things like Their main output is the series of comic books or stories called Dissident Hunters, which is all about people going out on great adventures to, you know, take care of people who are not towing the company line. It's a good propaganda thing.
There's our Helldivers crossover.
Yeah.
I think that's like one
of
the,
that's the Ministry of Truth
or player cards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, it's literally the Dissident Hunter, which is a fun comic book series that has all of the great, all of the great turn of the century corporate propaganda about making sure that you check in for your time and all of that good stuff. The next one is Colway Pharmaceuticals, which is just a holding company. There are literally no details in the game about what Colway Pharmaceuticals does.
But I'm sure it's not evil.
Yeah, it's definitely not evil. They own Auntie Cleo's, which is a manufacturer of pharmaceuticals and like cosmetics and things like that. They're also somewhat known for, surprisingly, unethical experiments done in the name of producing high-quality cosmetics and drugs.
We don't say.
We'll come back to Auntie Cleo's in a little bit.
Okay.
The next one is Rizzo's, which is a alcoholic drinks, cereals, and confectionery company. They each of the main companies that you run into in the game have funny colored armor. So it's kind of like an interesting. So the Outer Worlds is clearly made on like a much smaller budget than something on Fallout scale. And it doesn't really suffer from it at all. I think it's like really tightly written and stuff, but you can see the funny corners that they cut every once in a while. And there's like kind of, there's normal clothes and then there's armor. And then there's like three different versions of the armor of like, this is the light armor, this is the medium heavy, and this is the heavy armor. But the way that they differentiate it is that each one of these companies just has a different colorway. So you buy armor at the vending machines and it pops out. And if you buy from a Rizzo's machine, it's in purple berry purple and nanner blue and white. And then if you get it from Spacer's Choice, it's all just rusty yellow. And it's just like a fun thing where they like split it up like that.
It's got kind of Borderlands vibes.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yeah, it does. It reminds me of that, or like is kind of like hearkening back to like something about like Rizzo is just, is Rizzo a Muppet?
That feels right.
Is it like a rat? Rizzo the rat?
Yeah, that feels right.
For some reason, it just reminded me of Happy Days, and I don't know why, but it just sounds like the
Rizzo
soda
the
shop
rat
that goes to is Rizzo. Yes. Okay. Good.
Rizzo was also a character in Grease, which is maybe where the Happy Days thing is coming from.
That's where that's coming from. Okay. Yeah. So they make purple berry punch, I think is the name of the soda, but everything is purple berry with them. So that's good stuff. The next one is C&P, and I don't think C&P means anything. It's just C&P.
It's a gas company, I assume.
No, they are a food production company.
Oh, okay.
So people guess. They farm cysty pigs, which is as disgusting as it sounds, and it's just pigs, but they have cysts on their neck, and they taste like bacon, and when they mature, they fall off, and people harvest them, and then they put them in baked beans.
Is that... that feels less terrible than doing a pig murder?
Yeah, we'll come back to
that.
Or them
do they
in
find different ways to make it horrible? Okay.
Yeah, they find better ways to make it horrible.
Okay.
And then the last one of the corporations that we're dealing with here is Monarch Stellar Industries, MSI. They are the original exporters of salt tuna, and that's kind of all that they did. They had the fisheries on Terra 1, and then bad things happened on Terra 1, and now they're stuck there. They're kind of like the second act people that you work with the most.
What's their color scheme?
They are like a dark red, a dark blue, and a yellow. They're pretty good.
Mm. Yeah, I like that.
UDI is your classic everything gunmetal, so that's fine.
Okay. That's tough to steer away from.
Yes. Spacer's choice is fun because their armor is just kind of boring yellow stuff, but I think they're the only ones that you can buy a mascot helmet for, and their mascot is just a giant ass moon with a top hat on it that glows. So, you know, that's just where you end
that's
up going.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Is there like a... Do your characters react differently to you depending on your allegiance based on your clothing?
So I don't think they do it based on corporate allegiance, but there are other groups of people in the world. There's marauders. There are the other group I think is called the Iconoclasts, which we'll talk about a little bit. And they have specific armor that people will, if you go into a corporate place wearing marauder armor, they will mention it.
But no, in like a chill way, or in a like a we're gonna murder you kind of way?
I haven't had anyone do it in a we're gonna murder you kind of way, but I have had someone be like, hey, I see that you're wearing iconoclast armor, and look at how cool I am with that. Isn't that neato? In a hello fellow kids, I'm not a cool suit like worse. You think I am. Yep. It is.
Yeah. Do the murder instead.
Yeah. So those are your main factions sometimes that you end up dealing with. They're also like quest givers and stuff like that. You'll run into most of these corporations. And I guess maybe like a very rough view of what the Halcyon cluster looks like in relation to those is that, primarily when everyone came over on their colony ships, they started to terraform Terra 1. Things didn't go great to be revisited. They moved to Terra 2, and that has been going also not great, but for different reasons. And then there is a third planet. I think it's a third planet. There is a third planet. Oh, no, it is on Terra 2. Okay, so there's Terra 1, which is the first place that they went, and it went bad. And then there is Terra 2, where things didn't go great, but are slightly better than Terra 1.
That one also burned down, tip over, and sank into the swamp.
Yep. But the third one is also on Terra 2, and it's the city called Byzantium, which is...
That'll go well.
Yeah, sure. It's probably fine. But that's like the main city, and it's kind of like a cyberpunky walled city that's where all of the like heads of the corporations are. That's the capital of the Halcyon cluster, if you will. And then there's a series of other places, like you can go to different, I think one of the ones is like a murder mystery in a different place. Oh, of course there's Tartarus. The planet Tartarus is where all the that's the prison. You guessed it. Yeah. That's okay. That's where all the dissidents go, is they go to Tartarus.
At least they're not making us think too hard about it.
Yeah, yeah. So there, the colonization effort to get into the Halcyon cluster, it started with two ships. The first is the Groundbreaker, aptly named. It arrived on schedule to the Halcyon cluster, and this is where half of the people who would end up taking over the cluster and kind of like building all of the cities and getting the industries going and everything. This is also where the board came across. And these ships are, they're like cold storage ships. They're your classic, use a like warp drive. Mm-hmm. Everyone goes into cryo sleep and then they all wake up when they get there. The journey takes about 10 years of skip travel. So there's like a small crew is alive and kind of like running the ship and making sure everything works. And then they wake everyone up.
So we know how far this is going?
No, not really. There's not like a real discussion about like actual distance. I think part of that is just the setting itself. They don't really get into the science of it all, really.
That's fair.
Even some of the signs that you see is like also turn of the century styled.
Okay, so we're getting some like melding there too.
Yeah.
So these types of properties tend to do better when they stay general.
Yeah, especially when they have to be like consistent with the alternate history timeline that they're setting up. And it's like, well, somehow 300 years have passed and it still kind of looks the same, but we're not going to talk about it too much.
Yeah. Somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. So they started to colonize Terra 1. And so there is some problemos with that. Primarily, the process of terraforming the planet turned the native flora and fauna much more violent and hostile than they were previously, which has kind of been a problem for those people. So they shut down the planet, said, hey, get the hell out of here and go to this other planet called Terra 2. Don't worry about it. And then basically sectioned off all of Terra 1, now renamed as Monarch for reasons. And just okay. Don't go there. Just don't go there. You can't go there. We can't trade with people there. There's definitely not people there. Don't worry about it. We're over here now. Everything's fine.
We're all fine here.
Yep. Yeah. So that's the first ship. The second ship, the Hope, should have arrived on time with the Groundbreaker. And they were staffed with scientists and, you know, all of the other people that you need once a civilization has like started going and you need to start innovating and keeping everyone alive. Like now the grunt work is done. We can now move in the people who are able to keep us all alive in like a long-term kind of way. However,
it doesn't sound like they made it on time.
They didn't make it on time. So
they get like LV-426.
Not that bad. So I guess at some point there was a problem with it was 9 years into the 10-year journey.
Oh, that's most of it.
Yeah, most of it. The skip drive failed, and then they had to spend the next 26 years going at sublight speed.
Like impulse to get there. Power. Ugh.
Yep. They didn't make it very long. Like the alive crew did not make it very long, but it made it. So the Hope was finally found drifting at the edge of the Halcyon system, like decades after the Groundbreaker had like opened up and got people onto the ground building industry and everything. But the problem is that it wasn't something that was unknown. The board had found the Hope, and then they had covered it up, and they celebrate the anniversary of the Hope being lost as like a thing to bring everyone together. They basically just kept an entire cryo ship filled with people who could maybe solve some of their problems, just stored in cold storage decades after they could probably be safely awoken, just drifting out there in space.
Sometimes the propaganda win is worth more than the potential utility you get by turning those people into dust.
Yeah, yeah. So 35 years pass after it has already been discovered. So I think it's like fully 80-odd years since they were supposed to arrive. And then a scientist breaks in, revives one of the colonists, that's you, and then needs that person to liberate the ship's thousands of passengers to get the board to either fuck off or stay alive. So that's where you come from. You come from the Hope. You are one of the only colonists who is able to be awoken before the mad scientist Phineas Vernon Wells. A very good name.
Three names. Yeah. Gotta watch out for those three named sons of bitches.
And he's dangerous. He's a dangerous terrorist who wants to bring hope back to the system.
Ah, get it?
Mm-hmm. It's very tongue-in-cheek.
I think they did that on purpose.
Yeah, they might have. Feels weird to call one of them Groundbreaker and then preemptively call the other one Hope as if it was predestined to maybe not show up when it's supposed to.
That, nah, I think you're just reading into this.
Yeah, it couldn't possibly be done.
Yeah.
So the rest of this, I have some fun little pieces here. just like general questions, like the terraforming problems. So they tried to make the wildlife function in a place that is similar to, like, the, I guess, the surface of the Earth and everything, and that didn't work out great. They all mutated, got much, much bigger, and are severely dangerous. Some of them are very fun, like a giant praying mantis that really fucks you up. But kind of the best part of all of this is it's one of those games. So you dig through computer terminals and you find emails, and one of them is in a Rizzo secret lab. And it talks about how, hey, if we would change the oxygen saturation on this terraforming machine that we have to be a lower number, but not a deadly number for humans, it would solve all of our problems. Don't worry about it. Everyone would be alive. It's fine. But because they discovered that while researching a new soda brand, it was classified. So they had to keep that one secret.
This is, yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. This is, they're doing exactly what they should be doing.
Yep. Kind of the other thing that is hinted at, but is never really super prominent in the story of the game, is what Halcyon's connection to Earth is. So before you awake on the Hope, I guess Earth has been in contact with Halcyon, and there is at least one single ship from the Earth Directorate in the Halcyon cluster still, kind of there to be like, hey, we're here to make sure that everyone follows suit here. But previously, that ship is called the JJ Aster, which is, I think he is one of them classic robber barons, if I remember correctly.
Is there communication between Earth and Halcyon in like real-time communication?
I don't think so. I think that the way that it works is that ships travel back and forth. Like, they make the journey back and forth, so it's very time-delayed.
Age of Sail.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. There's no discussion of something like an Ansible or anything.
Okay.
Which is also important, because the last ship that left Halcyon for Earth, the Cornelius Vanderbilt, was supposed to arrive pretty soon after you, or pretty soon before you awake, and there is nothing, like no contact. So there is no contact going on between Earth and Halcyon, to the point where it's kind of alluded to that there is maybe something catastrophic that has happened in Earth. So there's no longer supplies coming either, which is important for where the story ends up going. So there's no contact, and also there seemed to be some sort of trade going on back and forth, and now there's nothing.
This seems like it's gonna go bad for these guys.
Yes, it does. We've now reached bullet point number two on my list. It's called Starvation Crisis. So,
did the British do this one too? Or?
No.
Okay.
I think this one kind of did it to themselves.
Okay.
So you may recall, I mentioned in the list of corporations that there are two that provide food. One of them is only making Saltuna, which is a species that is conflicting evidence, but it seems like it was discovered on the surface of Terra 1.
Discovered or forged from whatever
unclear
science they were doing. Okay.
Yeah, that one's unclear. But it turns out it's tasty-ish, I guess. So people would eat it, they would can it. It was in its natural habitat, so it grew plentifully. Unfortunately, all of the other terraforming garbage meant that people can't safely live on that planet anymore, so they had to evacuate. They took the Saltuna to Terra 2, where Spacer's Choice runs it now. And guess what? It's not going great, because those fish weren't from that planet, and you can't just put a goldfish in a new tank and expect everything to be fine.
Yeah, that seems Seems to be how fish work, from my understanding.
Yeah. So
just really animals in general.
Yeah, generally, yes. So that's one. So like their food source has had to move from one planet to another, and it's not going great. The other one is the CNP company that makes the baked beans with the pigs with bacon scarves. So that's also not going great because that factory is on Terra One. They didn't move. Oh, they stayed there.
It's bad there.
Yeah. So there's
someone should tell them.
Someone should tell them. Unfortunately, no one did, or they did know and they stayed. But so exports are like technically not sanctioned. So you'll find it in the world, but it's not getting out there in the way that it needs to. And obviously a sanctioned planet means that they can't get a ton of workers to fix it.
Which so contraband pig scarves.
Yes. And unfortunately this means the five-step process of the starvation crisis. Step one, cannibalism.
Wow. Just right out of the gate, huh?
Yep. Yep.
That's our opening salvo, straight to cannibalism.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of
good
early
job, everybody.
Early on in the game, you'll run into an employee who's missing and you need to go find him. And then the quest ends up taking you to a family of, you know, oddballs. And then if you have a high enough lockpick skill, you go up to the top of the house, you open it up and see that the man you were looking for has been murdered and also begun to be processed. And it seems like cannibals are a thing that are not just are feared, but on two different planets, they have mentioned the cannibals exist and that it is happening. One of the first things that you do in the Spacer's Choice planet is you have a decision between, you know, do you stick with the corporation and force all of these deserters to go back to the corporate town, or do you take the power from the corporation and force them to figure out what they're doing? Which seems like a pretty cut and dry exercise in a game like this, until you find out that the deserters, who are thriving and able to grow their own food finally, are growing it from fertilizer from human remains that they have to, you know, pulverize and, you know, harvest people to make those plants grow.
So it's like secret cannibalism.
Secret cannibalism. It's like recycling. Three steps from Kevin Bacon cannibalism, I guess. Like, it's not, you're not quite eating people, but you are eating the byproducts of people.
Yeah.
Speaking of
the transitive property of cannibalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's your title.
So remember that CMP factory I was talking about?
Is it people?
It's not people.
Okay.
But the pigs are fed on people. So it's, you know, transitive property people.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they...
Yeah, I'm fine with that. That's
yeah. Probably fine. It's fine. Actually... So it's not just people. It's the people who work in the factory who don't decide that they want to do the 23-hour work day.
Oh, that's worse. You made it worse now.
Yep. So they...
That's less recycling and more just cycling, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So it's that. And one of the fun things you can do as a quest there is that you find out about the factory because the person who runs kind of the underworld on that planet is like, hey, this guy's a real pain in the ass. I would like to have a factory that makes money. So if you could go kill him, that would be great. And you go there, and I snuck in there and talked to him. And I was like, man, that's some dead bodies you got right there. You feeding them to those pigs? And he's like, yeah, I am doing that. But hey, I have a deal for you. What if you talk to the lady who wanted to kill me and instead tell her that if she drops her bodies off right here, I'll just be a cleaner service for her? And that's a choice you can make. You can either kill everyone, you could kill one of them, or, you know, keep the machine going, make sure the people get fed.
If you do a murder, can you feed him to his pigs?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if there's like a Skyrim drag the bodies kind of thing in this, but that would be fun.
Feels like they're setting up that kind of morality play.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing that good, but I would appreciate it if that is true.
It's more of a dishonored thing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too poetic.
I'm not encouraged that there are four things on the list after cannibalism.
Oh, okay. I lied. There's technically only three things.
That's still bad.
Less. Some of them are less aggressive. Some of them are just funny. The next one is chimeras. So they are scientists who are studying, I guess, like, or developing chimera plants. So taking the actual the plant life that is on these different planets and trying to genetically engineer them to be more sustainable for human life.
Mm-hmm.
The part where it's, well. Yeah, the part where it's not great is that I think that that's how you would do it if you were like trying to make this in like a Starfield game. Unfortunately, what they do is the opposite. So instead, these people are doing scientific tests on their own genomes to find a way to make their bodies accept the crops and thrive off of the food that is native to Halcyon. Two awful, awful things.
That actually seems like it might be a lesser ask. So
to like change human nature instead of trying to make space corn be normal corn?
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to make the space corn be normal corn in space, where it's already space corn.
Yeah. I see. You can only ruin
that planet once. We found that out with the first one.
With the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can ruin a lot of different people once, which seems to be kind of their vibe anyway.
That's so true. Yes. Technically, the main scientist in charge of this program and her entire team, they refuse to work on prisoners and people who skipped out on work. They tested on themselves and that has not gone great, and also has maybe robbed the entire colony of the people who are smart enough to solve the problem.
Yeah, that seems
bad, right?
I mean, if your other option is the prisoner testing, that's a tough hurdle also.
Yeah, yeah. You find out from that main scientist, because obviously she is still alive she's in Byzantium, the big walled city of corporations. And she's the one that you find out from that the ship that the Cornelius Vanderbilt that left from Halcyon to go to Earth never arrived, because she had given them her scientific notes to like work with Earth scientists to solve this problem, and something happened on Earth where the line is dead, honey. Nothing's coming back. So it's just bad for her all around.
Have the Halcyon folks just accepted that like the Earth connection is done forever, or is there still some assumption that that may be reestablished? Like, are they sending out ships to go back to Earth?
No. So there's not really, as far as I can tell, there are not ships that are capable of making that long trek. So the cold storage stuff relies on a very specific type of a very specific chemical, which the board throughout the game, you find out, has been hoarding this very particular chemical that is like required to activate the cold storage stuff. So ships could potentially fly back to Earth to find out, but that is a 10-year journey they would have to make and then come back. So news would take 20 years to get there just to find out what's going on. And you'd have to have a ship capable of it. And most of the ships you see are like teeny tiny. They're like boats. They're not big ships besides the Hope and the Groundbreaker.
Okay, that tracks. I suppose you probably want to be doing other things with those resources also.
Yeah.
Shooting them into the darkness and hoping for the best.
Yeah, and hoping something comes back. Yeah. So the starvation crisis of the game, which is kind of like the crux of what you're trying to solve, your first actual interaction with it is on a small second planet that you go to that have you visiting it, a top secret research facility. And you go to this research facility because the person, your underworld contact, told you, hey, there's probably some juicy research you can steal from this place. And it's probably abandoned because it was overrun by scary creatures. So just go in there, kill the creatures, grab whatever cool research you can, and get out. And you find out quickly that there's still some scientists there who sent out that distress call. You do a bunch of odd jobs, find some different things there, and you come across a top secret product that this Auntie Cleo's facility was making. It's very top secret. It's really important that you give the notes back to the main guy. And then you find out that actually this product that they were researching that is so top secret and so important to them is diet toothpaste.
I have questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel that implies the existence of non-diet toothpaste.
Yes.
Does their diet prefix also notate a lack of sugar as ours does?
It doesn't. Well, kind of.
Okay.
It is toothpaste to help you diet.
Is it just like amphetamines or meth? Or
nothing that
just
good.
Uppers? So rubbing your gums with uppers all day.
See, it's still actual functional toothpaste. It's barely better than just regular toothpaste at actually dealing with cavities, which is good, you know, great stuff. The purpose of it is that it is an appetite suppressant. So it just makes the people working there less hungry. So the food that they are making that has to continue to have more packaging and less food in it sustains them more so that they don't die as quickly, or at least realize that they're dying quickly, so that they can continue churning out products that make profit for the corporations that live in Byzantium, where all the food is and it doesn't matter anyways.
Bleak.
Is also, it could make you blind.
Oh, well, I just assume that's sort of a... Yes. Without stated. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like makes you less hungry and makes you require less food to not die are different things.
Correct,
so,
yes.
So, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Okay. Yeah. It's literally in one of the messages, it says, the need for less food to satisfy our workers can add greatly to our bottom line. So marketing is focusing their efforts in that direction.
Naturally.
Specifically that, this email starts, seriously, Anton, you really must let the whole blindness thing go. Your dedication to solving it is admirable, but also a bit misguided, I dare say. It's really not that big of an issue in the grand scope of this whole thing, and pales in comparison to the texture and flavor issues, which we'd prefer for you to spend all your time on. That is like this game in a nutshell.
Yeah, so it's got that kind of like Fallout snark.
Yes. To it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like the first person you run into in this game who is alive, I guess, is a security guard for Spacer's Choice, and he has been grievously wounded in an attack, and he's sitting there, and the first thing he says is like three different Spacer's Choice slogans at you, just to let you know that he is in the Spacer's Choice faction, and you know, it's not the best choice, it's Spacer's Choice. They know
you
what,
know
they're
what
doing.
You're getting.
Yep.
Yeah. Low ceiling, probably a pretty low floor too, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
A predictable floor.
Yes. Yeah. And what is better in the predictable floor of where this is all inevitably going than, I guess, you know, here's your spoiler alert for how this game ends, I guess. But you go through all of this, the diet toothpaste, the cannibalism, the scientists who are trying to make humans be better at eating the food here, and you finally make it to Byzantium. You go to the big gilded city, and you run into Chairman Rockwell, who is the chairman of the board, and he wants you to do something for him, and it is getting all of this chemical that he is kind of like sequestered away, and take the hope that he knows that you are from, and just go park it over by that prison planet. Let's talk about that a little bit. And it is part of this great initiative that they've put together called the Lifetime Employment Program.
Not a fan, but mm-hmm. okay.
So the chairman of the board wants you to move a generation ship that has
yep.
cryopods to the prison planet.
Uh-huh.
He has also hoarded all of the chemicals that you need in order to put people in cryo sleep.
Yep. Makes sense.
As part Following of a program in. Called the Lifetime Employment Program, the crux Who's of lifetime? Which... Well, it's everyone's lifetime, unfortunately. The way that this works is that the food is running out. There is like not a ton of food around to sustain the entire population of Halcyon. However, we do have a big ship that has room for thousands and thousands of people. So, what if we turn the prison planet into an Ellis Island processing plant of some variety? We jettison the thousands of people who are in cryosleep out of the Hope, and then we slowly walk everyone in to the Tartarus planet. And then I'll put them to bye-bye sleep time. And we wake them up when we need work to be done. And then we go put them back in there. Because if they're not working, they don't need to be eating food. Meanwhile, we on Byzantium are using all of the food reserves that were made for the thousands and thousands of people. And we're just living pretty out here. We'll be dead before this all craters anyways.
So there's no end game there, right?
I mean, they die, right? That's the end game. Hopefully it keeps going after them, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Okay, so they're just trying to buy enough resources until their ship comes to port, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
And to hell with anyone after that.
Yes. And
why did they need to leave Earth for this? This seems
it does like
they
went to
a
silly.
Lot of trouble they didn't need.
Yes. But I mean, maybe it was going to go great. Like, you know, maybe the profits were going to be flowing when they got there originally. But now that things have turned, it's time to repeatedly revive human subjects from hibernation so that they don't die, but also so that they don't necessarily live.
I am surprised that there was leadership that made it out this far this early. It seems... Seems like not the thing those people do.
Yeah, I think the bigger question for me in seeing some of the people that you interact with is it's unclear to me if the corporations who purchased the Halcyon system are only in Halcyon. Like it's hard to know if the CEO of UDI is the chairman of the board, or if these are all middle management bureaucrats who are hopped up on a little too much power.
That tracks better for me.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I've been looking at it, because most of the people you run into who run the towns are like low level middle managers who care about their performance reviews and want to be promoted still. And I think that's generally... Like, that is generally the game's lens on corporate bullshit anyways, is with that they're all middle managers who don't care about you kind of tone.
Yeah, that it does have that affect to it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Hang in there. It's got that.
Yes. So that is the starvation crisis in Halcyon. And each one of those points, you kind of, as the player, have a way to do something with it. Like, obviously, the alternative to the Lifetime Employment Program is you say, fuck off, I want those chemicals, and then you awaken the people on the Hope, and then it's filled with scientists and people who can come and help stabilize things. It just means that the board will fall. Or you go the other way, and you can finish this game by being a good old corporate lackey and putting all your best friends in the cold storage and
in the pig farm.
Yep. And then you just live happily ever after on Byzantium, I guess.
Oh, so you get your, like, if you lick the boot hard enough, you get your happy ending.
I'm pretty sure you do. I obviously have not found out, but I'm pretty sure that that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. All right. My last two loose ends here before we wrap up. I goaded you a little bit a while ago with mention of there's also space religion.
Yeah. And iconoclast me up.
Yeah. So there's two different religions in Halcyon. There is the religion of the iconoclasts, which is called philosophism. And that is, it's the belief that the universe was created organically and naturally without a purpose at all. You know, your generous Big Bang. This is what I feel like most atheism is to some degree. There is no truth. It is simply, it is, and we must live with that.
Things just are.
Yeah.
Because they have been.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like some amount of actual like religiosity to it. So, you know, by being part of the cosmos and fulfilling a role in the universe, you are, you know, receiving the eternal truth. Like that is the eternal truth, that your job is to be a part of this and that you have a role, but that role is completely predestined to you. And then coming to understand that and then being a part of the journey is what kind of makes you divine in some ways.
Okay. Yeah. That.
So it's a little bit more like spiritual than pure atheism and like nihilism.
Yeah.
At like the far extent of that.
That feels like vaguely, I don't know, Hegelian or something.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
So that's
okay. What's the crazy one?
Yeah. So philosophism is the, like, that is the religion of the outcasts. Like those are the people who are, you know, they don't work for no corp man. They believe in egalitarian things, and yeah, we're all just out here trying to survive, dude.
Vaguely romantic enlightenism, yes. Sort of.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their main quest is that you have to get spare parts for a printing press so they can make propaganda to spread across the world. So that's where they're at.
That's where they're at. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the state religion.
Bring on the crazy. Yeah.
So the state religion of the corp sanctioned state religion of the Halcyon cluster is called the Order of Scientific Inquiry. The OSI.
That's good. Yep.
So it's a little bit deist and it's a little bit predestination.
Secret police? Because that's what it sounds like.
It's not that bad. It's much more, it's less Pinkerton and more predestination, but by way of corporate structures, because it's the state sanctioned one. So the core belief here is that there is someone, that someone is called the Grand Architect. And in the beginning of everything, they created a perfect system, and then they walked away. So they somehow created a perfect system that can be quantifiable and understood, and then just decided to like set that Newton's cradle going, and then they walked away and let it just happen. And it's a little Darwinian, which is funny because we were talking about that earlier. It is colloquially referred to as scientism. Because everything is mathematical, can be understood, and there is a path that is followed because it has all been set in motion, and all we are to do is to follow along the path.
Okay. This, how long before we're like measuring skull bumps? Because that feels like where this goes.
Yeah, I think the assumption is that we've already done that, and we've now moved past that maybe.
That got boring.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's basically the notion that you can understand the properties of the particles in the universe. And then by understanding those properties, you will be able to know everything. So once you crack the code, you'll be able to know the future, the past, and everyone's place within the plan. And then that removes struggle and brings peace, real Jedi stuff. Uh-huh. And then that means that once you understand that, we will all become the Grand Architect, and we'll set our own things in motion. And that's all like lofty and fun stuff. The part where it becomes the state-sanctioned religion is that ultimately, as a believer of scientism, you cannot defy your role in the grand plan because it's a plan. It was set in motion. Yeah. You are simply here to do what you are here to do. And you will do that thing because you must follow the path that has been set before you.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be the plan.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is like the insidious fun part of all of this is that like they got you. They got you in the workplace. They got you in the spiritual room. They got you in the food. That it's everywhere, baby.
And it's not going great.
No, it did not go
great. Seems like they did a bad job.
Yeah. So the scientism stuff is built out a little bit more because one of your companions is a vicar of scientism. So you get the six pillars of scientism as they appear on OSI branded prayer beads. So,
okay.
The first one, survival of the fittest. Nature abhors equality. The strong survive and the weak perish for the betterment of the whole. Second one.
Sure.
Yep. Determinism. We are all molecular machines. The body is a collection of atoms. The mind is a consequence of chemical reactions. Our lives are therefore predestined along a path that is only visible in retrospect.
Okay.
Somewhat.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, somewhat understandable. The predestined bit is still something I bristle at, but fine.
I'll convince you. Don't worry.
The next one, empiricism. The only real knowledge is that which we can observe, quantify, and measure for ourselves. Scientific experimentation.
Math then.
Scientific experimentation.
No a priori knowledge.
No. You don't need that.
Okay.
Is there math in here? There's not math later. Okay. The only way to understand the elaborate blueprint of the universe is through scientific experimentation, which does have a basis in math, but I guess we're not talking about it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Step number five, stoicism. Reason, not emotion, is the seat of morality. Wisdom means accepting the vicissitudes of life with grace and dignity. Again.
Yeah, this is... We're doing a lot of Christianity here, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is intentional, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I would assume this is supposed to be an outgrowth of, like, the full, going full corpo on those concepts.
I haven't done any looking into, like, what, if there are, like, more, this is an absurd thing to say, but if there's more, like, corporation-friendly religions in this kind of way, but I imagine that a lot of this ends up like by mashing classical concepts like empiricism and stoicism into something that is like a belief structure is that does not feel far from where we are now. Like that there is an incredible uptick of business books about using stoicism in your daily life.
Shud's been reading The Art of War and like misapplying ancient texts for a long time now.
That's true. Yeah. We've all picked up a copy of Machiavelli just to see what's up in there.
Yeah. But like I don't think that has a lot of like one-to-one parallels with having like an MBA.
No.
I feel like that's the crowd that swallows that.
Yeah, that's the Twitter crowd. Yeah. Next one. Teleological order. All things have a reason for existing and a purpose to fulfill. The purpose of humanity is to eventually unlock and solve the universal equation.
How have they come to these conclusions? Do we examine that at all?
Well, it's all part of the plan, you see.
How do we know what is and is not part of the plan?
Well, it is part of the plan. There is no is not part of the plan.
Well, that's just full determinism then.
Yeah.
But that implies that there's no free will in their argument, which I feel like is not quite their jam either. Or is that?
It is.
Like if you're going hard determinism, that negates the concept of free will. Those are at odds with each other.
There is a notion of being able to, they kind of refer to it as a rubber band effect, kind of. Like your path is a rubber band. You can step, you can kind of stretch that rubber band in different directions, but ultimately, the harder you pull it away from like neutral, the harder the snap is going to be when you come back, because you will come back because you are here to fulfill a purpose and part of the plan. So there is a notion of like that stretching of the rubber band is maybe not determined, but it is, I don't know. This is where I start to fall apart. The difference between like determined and predestined, like what we don't have time to get into the differences there, but I still don't really grok it.
We could do a whole weird episode about all kinds of dumbness around predeterminism and does free will exist? Maybe that'll be an info dumping one of these days.
Yeah, that would be a fun one. I will sit back and argue both sides of that one.
Yeah, I will too. I'll pick whichever one you don't want. I don't care.
Perfect. The last one here in the OSI playbook is the patronage of science. The purpose of humanity is realized through scientific achievement. Advancements in science and technology bring humanity closer to fulfilling its role in the cosmos. Which is just a platitude, I think. Like that's just a nice thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of words that don't actually like mean a thing.
Yeah. It feels odd that's on the prayer beads, but you know.
I wonder how this ties into the decision to terraform humans to eat the space corn instead of doing the planet. Like, is there like a human supremacy kind of vibe to this at all? Or is the plan above those kinds of considerations?
I think the plan is probably above those. There's not necessarily... So the only aliens you run into are, you know, like seen as beasts or interacted with as beasts. Like they're all bloodthirsty monsters who come and get you. So I don't know if the whole like human supremacy thing is even ever tested, really. There's not really a discussion of like if we found intelligent life, like what is our way of dealing with that or that. I kind of would assume that human supremacy is perhaps just, I don't know, accepted based on the setting. You know, if you kind of extrapolate where we were in 1901 circa McKinley, I can't imagine that there's a very welcome all comers perspective to that.
Yeah, it feels like it might just be sort of baked in.
Yeah.
That's an assumption. Yeah, well, this is some real drudgery you brought us.
Yeah, I was looking back on it a little bit and about how when we started the show, it was like, oh, let's make it a positive, fun time. I only want to talk about things that we enjoy and have a good go of it. That's what I said. You brought the RPG with dogs, and then
I did.
I brought the turn of the century. Time. Yeah. Retrofuturism. Yeah. That's bad for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. We fully flipped here.
Yeah.
I'm going to rot your mind before you abandon this show.
It is not lost on me that this is where we have ended up.
Like 20 episodes in or something.
Yep. I mean,
I've already corrupted you.
I've done my best to just, you know, take it all in and try to find what I can, because I do want to remind you, just to like drop a hint of an episode we won't do now. Corpo Lore episode 2 was originally going to be about Weyland Yutani. So I've gone from the absolute worst, and I've just dialed it back a little bit. So there's still room to grow.
I mean, yeah, that would round out the trilogy.
Yep.
I mean, that's going to be more than a trilogy, let's be fair.
Oh, yeah. Corpo Lore will continue.
It's a bottomless shit well.
Yep. Well, we'll go back to Bionicle and bring the vibe back.
But some of that got dark, too, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That had its own corpo lore with stealing the cultures of indigenous peoples.
What happy properties do we have left? I haven't updated our board in so long that...
Do I have anything that's happy on this list?
I mean, there are like vaguely happy RuneScape things I could do, but there's also some real some real darkness there too.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's not great, everything is fine, don't worry about it, everyone's just really having a good time over here worlds to discuss, you know. We have to talk about murdering gods, or, you know, men in lighthouse and cities and all of that stuff.
I did pick up History of Sodor again, so I made it a little bit further into that, so maybe eventually we'll have a tank engine on the horizon. That can only go so bad, right? Probably.
Who knows? Okay. Thanks for listening. This has been an interesting dive into a game that I played 5 years ago and decided to pick up again. You should play The Outer Worlds. It's pretty good. You should also play The Outer Wilds. It's very good, but we didn't talk about that today.
I haven't played either of them yet, and I probably should.
Yeah, Wilds then Worlds, and that's
Wilds, then Worlds,
preferred way to go.
Okay, I gotta write that down.
Yeah, write that down. GordonHamburger.com is where you can go for links and stuff. I have recorded two videos. I have to edit them together, but they will be going up soon on the YouTube, so, you know, keep an eye out for that. Our music is done by Nicholas Cahill, our very good friend, and we will be back next week with another Codex entry. Until then, we will see you later.